Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But we're now streaming live with video on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. You can also stream us audio only on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, as well as the Odyssey app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. Follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
What do we have, Quizmas today?
Yes, we do. Come on down to South Haven. Play a little bit of not just any trivia, Christmas-themed, holiday-themed trivia. Down in South Haven at Dan McGinnis, it is the Quizmas Spectacular, brought to you guys, of course, by Cerrito Entertainment.
Kevin went with a swerve today, thinking that I would have been preparing.
He threw you a little slider.
I am appreciative that he thinks that I would study up. He thought I was prepping holiday questions, so he swerved and went with easy questions, which is always a tough one because, like, that is a you miss one and it's over.
Yeah.
You are just fighting from underneath.
Lock in.
Correct. So we went with that. Came down to the final question. Good battle from Teddy there in Arlington. My company is each and every Thursday. He writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on the Everything app at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day. A heck of a night of basketball for the city of Memphis last night, huh?
Well, it was funny because coming into yesterday, I wasn't even being negative about the Grizzlies. I just felt like, all right, man, they got the game in LA. I knew Anthony Edwards wasn't going to be playing, but at the same time, it's like, man, I didn't exactly love the matchup last night. But I mean, that was one of the more fun, no apparent reason wins I think we've had with the Grizzlies in a very long time. And then with the Tigers, you didn't quite know what to think because on the one hand, like they picked up the effort, like they played tough, but then on the other, it's like you can't divorce yourself from basically what the last 3.5 minutes of overtime. Cause what they took, didn't they take like I think they scored the first 4 points of overtime. And then I don't even remember them getting a shot after that.
Yeah, the half-court offense, it really doesn't exist. And so what happened is they started fouling too much. I mean, they just put Vanderbilt on the line. Like, if they made Vanderbilt play a possession, Vanderbilt was turning the ball over or taking, like, a contested bomb of a three-pointer, or one of their guards was dribbling straight into traffic. And so what happened is they started fouling, like, when Vanderbilt was trying to get the ball inbounds, like, they would foul. And it was just the whole thing got away from them because of that. Partially because I think Memphis had to be running on absolute fumes by that point in the game.
There's no question Doug McDaniel definitely was, because Doug played 42 of whatever, 45 minutes.
Yeah, and those weren't just like laissez-faire minutes, like half-court basketball. It was like literal full court mayhem for, I mean, really, when did that all start? I mean,
it felt like to me, it felt to me it was like the back half of the first half.
Yeah. But on the Grizzlies front, I think there's a case to be made that maybe the best win of the season. I realize Minnesota didn't have Anthony Edwards, but that team still had Rudy Gobert and Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo, and you're on the road without Zach Edey or Ja Morant or Cam Spencer, who's low-key been one of your best players for the last month, and you were a 6.5-point underdog and found a way to win that game. So, you could be encouraged by the Memphis Tigers game, too. I mean, that Vanderbilt team has beaten everybody and beaten most people pretty soundly, and if Memphis is able to bring the energy that they brought last night in the American, it doesn't matter if the offense is hot garbage. Like, there's just so few teams who will be able to handle that level of pressure. You look at Vanderbilt. The one thing they didn't do going into that game last night was turn the ball over. One of the best, like, most sure-handed teams in the country, three guards averaging more than 4 assists per game, and Memphis rattled the mess out of them, made them look so uncomfortable. And so, I mean, is that level of effort replicable night in, night out in the American? It might have to be, because honestly, like, there's not a whole lot else that team can go to generate points.
We've got Eric coming up next segment, so we're going to get plenty of Grizzlies talk, and I don't want this to be like a focus on the negative. I just thought there were more interesting things that happened last night. Last night from the Grizzlies felt just like fun. Oh my God, can you believe they're doing this? You know what I mean? You get Jock Landale, the closer. You know, and obviously, I think the biggest development is Jaren appears to be out of whatever funk he was in.
Yeah, that was great. And then you turn on the TV and you're like, oh, wait, Brandon Clark's back. Okay, about that? Like, I almost forgot.
My wife did the, wait, Brandon's back? I go, well, tonight. I was like, it happened tonight. So it wasn't like you were out of the loop. Like,
I mean, he was a minus 15 in whatever he played, but I don't care. I was just glad to see him out there, you know?
I was glad to see him out there. Also, I don't know. So his tell your story is, he claimed after the game that the training staff or whoever, you know, whoever's in charge of the biomechanic measurements says that he has got more spring and like he's jumping higher than he did last year. Now, I think that's an important caveat. I can buy that. If it was like he's jumping higher than ever, okay, well, that's where I'm going to have to start. I'm like, okay, that doesn't pass the smell test. I can buy than last year because I think you and I both agreed he never looked right the whole year.
No, but that's good news, though, if he's jumping high. It's hard to really evaluate him
To me, was solely going to be eye test. I didn't care anything number-wise. Like, it was just eye test.
Just the conditioning factor of having not played in an NBA basketball game since March, all of a sudden you're out there against a team that has really quality bigs, no less. Kind of a tough first assignment, but I thought he did BC things and brought that BC energy, and maybe it's going to take a minute for him to, you know, well, like, I still feel like we're trying to figure out from the first injury whether or not he can ever be who he was again. And the bounce, the spring, I don't know what his vertical was, but when he first came into the league as a rookie, man, he was, I mean, for the first three quarters of that rookie season where he was in that class with Ja.
Yep.
And if I'm not mistaken, did they both end up as first team all rookie, or did BC end up second team all rookie? Regardless, like,
I think he was second.
He was one of the best rookies in that class. And, you know, he's one of those guys who, like, because he was an older prospect, there wasn't really a whole lot of.
No, you're right. First team all rookie.
Yeah. You know, and there was never like a whole lot of extra growth or extra development there because he was already 23, I think, when he came into the league. But you just hope that you can get like who he was. Like, if you can ever get who he was, even as a rookie, like, that's a really helpful player. And it's too early after one game to say whether or not he's going to be that. But when you got Zach Edey out and you've had the run of injuries that you've had, like, it's just nice to look up and see a familiar face on the floor.
Well, it's just nice to have an NBA quality big. Like, yes, Brandon is undersized, but even when we're talking about him not playing at his best, he has still been better than what some of the options that they've had at the bigs.
I mean, right? Like, you really haven't had options. So, but Jock Landale, my gosh, just raining down threes last night. I mean, he was on another planet. insane.
Put him on TNT, yeah, baby. He's the closer.
You know, and the cool thing was, it's like down the stretch, or at least in the fourth quarter in general, like they didn't really have to rely on Jaron all that much. Like,
no,
it felt like other guys were stepping up.
Maybe this is also, this is somewhat based on like expectations. Was I alone in kind of thinking the whole time I kept waiting for Minnesota to make their move? Like there was like a moment with like 5 minutes left where I'm like, all right, like when they cut it to three. And I was like, all right, well, here's where, because we've kind of seen this script from the Grizzlies where when they get into some of these games, like the Spurs game, where they've been competitive, like at times they've had the lead, and then they get into the fourth quarter and it slips away and they didn't nearly ever, like they kind of went full Memphis Tigers. They didn't really run a whole lot of offense and they didn't get a lot of quality looks and they get beat. I was kind of waiting for that to happen, and then man, they just kept making shot after shot after shot, and they never really let, I don't really feel like they let the Timberwolves get within a possession until, I think after that, I don't think they got within a possession.
Yeah, I mean, you had like five players with three or more assists, which was huge because the nervy thing about that situation on the road, without Ja Morant, without Scottie Pippen Jr., without Ty Jerome, without Cam Spencer, right? Like, especially
I mean, they
Ja
were basically, Sed was their point guard.
Yeah, for a long stretch there, and it worked. Like, they were able to handle the pressure, and they didn't ever start chucking the ball around, which, you know, when I turned over from the Memphis basketball game, I'd been watching a version of basketball that I think I was casting my anxiety onto the Grizzlies-Timberwolves game because of the just insanity of the Memphis Tigers game. And so, you know, it's late in the fourth quarter there, and Grizzlies don't have a point guard, and I'm just, like, sweating because I'm thinking, because of what I just watched. Like happened with the Memphis Vanderbilt game and the insane amount of turnovers and all that. And it's like, wow, like these are mature NBA basketball players who know how to handle a trap and who know how to not turn the ball over. And so that was encouraging, like that a point guardless Grizzlies could hang on to a late lead on the road.
To your point, if you were a one TV person and you waited till the end of the Tiger game and flipped it over, you felt like you were watching a different sport.
Different
and
sport.
It was like right off the bat too. It was like there was like quick passing. Like it was just like right off the bat. You're like, okay, this doesn't even seem like I'm watching this. It was a stark contrast because I had the Grizzlies on. I had the Tigers on with sound, and then when the game ended, I flipped the Grizzlies over with sound, and it was just like alarming to watch.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was funny. I watched. So I don't know. I didn't have any options. Like I had to watch the Grizzlies game on NBA TV.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was that the same for you or
no? So I think when they do NBA TV in that format, you just get the home broadcast.
Okay. So whatever it was, I somehow had the Timberwolves broadcast and I love this line at the end of the game from I think it was their play by play guy who said it. He goes, their injury list looks like a CVS receipt and they lead by 8 with 47 seconds to go.
Well, I mean,
and I was like,
it's not going to be mythologized, but man, that had vibes of like the Hateful Eight going to Oklahoma City and winning. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
it's
not going to have the promos that were cut from after the game. Like, I don't think Jock Landau is going to ever cut a Tony Allen promo, but like it had the vibes of like, can you believe they're doing this?
No, and I really couldn't. My
couldn't either.
So minimal. Yeah. I mean, so I think there were like, obviously Jaron and Jock Landau had a lot to do with that. But like, how about Omax Prosper? Like, I'd love to get a more extended look at that guy. I mean, I realize they're only going to get, I shouldn't even say that. I was about to say, I realize they can only get healthier from here. That might not be true.
While that might not be true, I do believe last night was the third game. I think they're now eligible for another hardship.
Okay. Who are they going to bring in for this one?
I think it's
what's the Jarnell Stokes
no,
doing?
I think it's time to get wide. It's some Bassie time, baby.
Oh, okay, Bassie. You know, DJ Stephens, he's probably still jumping on, you know, dunking on people in Japan or
Where
something.
Where is Jarnell these days?
What's Drew Barham doing? You can find him, see if he can just shoot a little bit for you. You know, let's just go down memory lane here. So the Grizzlies have had to.
Is our boy, he's on the Spurs now, isn't he? The bargain bin big. They signed him off the
Biyombo?
Oh,
Bismack. Yeah. I was about to say like actual African name. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Doral Smith. You could get Doral Smith, right? Doral, what was his last name? Doral, who played for a little bit as a big, you know?
That I actually, we used to joke that the level, you know, like some of the most beloved characters in Grizzlies lore are like backup guards. I think the funnier options are like some of the backup bigs that have just passed through in the middle of the night. There's some classics.
Oh, yeah. You can go way back on that too. Like
we didn't even mention Omri Caspi.
Oh man, I covered the Omri Caspi era. I was on the beat when Omri Caspi and Garrett Temple got in a
allegedly.
Well, I forget how it was phrased, but a brotherly
incident or something. Like it was like some type of incident.
Oh man, that
Brian
year was
Cardinal.
Brian Cardinal. Oh gosh,
my favorite was when Brian Cardinal just showed up with hair. Like he just pulled a full Urlacher, where it's like,
yeah,
we saw you without hair, and then he just showed up again with hair. I was like, well, I guess I kind of respect it.
Oh man, they've gone through them. I mean, obviously you had the 1 year where you end up with Birdman on your team and stuff, but that's what this feels like almost. But the cool thing about it is, even despite all the injuries this year, like they're treading water, like they're hanging in there. Like
Saturday, they should be 500. And if I would have said through 28 games, if I would have offered you 14-14 through the first 28, you would have 100% taken it.
Yeah, the Jazz loss the other night really made me mad. Like I didn't like that loss. But I mean, look, you're right. 13-14 was a great chance.
I think last night kind of evened it up.
That's true. Like, because you should have won the Jazz game. You shouldn't have won on the road against Minnesota, and you did. So, you made up for it. So it's you're 13-14. Yeah, I mean, you got the Wizards coming in on Saturday. Okay. Yeah, but look, then you go back out to OKC. You know, but whatever. Hey, just hang around 500 until what? I haven't seen Jeffrey enlighten me on what the actual update is on Ja. I'm assuming just he twisted his ankle. It'll be, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. But
it
I don't
was
know.
The last. My dad and I were having this discussion as I was driving in. So in the last like 2 minutes of the Clippers game, he just stepped on somebody.
Yeah, no, I saw it. I just haven't heard what they're
saying day to day. He was originally listed as questionable, and beg your pardon. Then he was downgraded to doubtful. So it does seem like
It's not 6 to 8. Like that's a miracle right there. Like, you know, I've gotten to a point where with these Grizzlies, it's like, you know, somebody twists an ankle or like, you know, hurts their little pinky or something. You know, you just assume they're out for the season, 8 to 10 weeks minimum. You know, 6 to 8 if you're lucky. So to hear that he actually maybe could have played is really encouraging.
Now it's also important to note, you know, when Ja tweaks an ankle, there usually is another tweak of the ankle.
The unfortunate thing is that his shoes are low tops, and I have three pairs of Ja ones. I love them.
You and I feel like I'm dying on a cliff here. The fact that guys are wearing low top basketball shoes is insane to me.
Yeah, especially guys with a chronic ankle injury.
Correct.
Like if you play below the rim and whatever, like, and you've got tree trunks for legs, okay. Maybe you can get away with wearing low tops, but if you're Ja Morant or, you know, you're built like me and you have little twigs for ankles, like, you know, you probably ought to be wearing like old school high tops, and maybe Ja 4s can be high tops. That's just a suggestion for Nike.
I was trying to remember the first pair of low tops. I even remember. Remember when Iverson came out with his own shoe? I think it was and one. I think Iverson was with the and one. That's the first low top I remember. I just don't ever remember them being popular until like the last 3 or 4 years.
I think that it's new-ish. Yeah. I like them because I can wear them.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, they look like a useful everyday shoe. I just don't know if I want to play in the NBA with them.
Yeah, right. They have a little bit more padding, like for sure. Like they do have more padding than like your run-of-the-mill like running sneaker or tennis shoe. You know, so it's a little more fortified than that, but I don't think it gives you the support. Now, I mean, you could also wear like big old like ankle braces or something.
Well, I mean, I think DeMichael said like he's now gotten into ankle brace. But my thing is, like, wear the high tops with the ankle braces.
Why not? Yeah. So we got to explore all options there, especially now that his game is less predicated on above the rim verticality, right? Like, for Ja at this point, I mean, he's less of his living is made now at the rim, putting people on posters than it was before.
Although he tried to get Kevin Love the other night. I was thinking about this. I think I could deal with the moodiness, the poor leadership, the, like, all of the negative emotions, and I could live with the he's just not that good of a shooter if he played. I think the biggest complaint and the reason why it's like he, like, we make fun of, like, Anthony Davis, like, Ja is street clothes.
I mean, it's crazy. It's not a perfect comparison by any stretch, but, well, there's a lot of point guards in the league, like Derrick Rose, for example, whose career trajectory was derailed by injury. I mean, look,
but like those two examples that you're using, they had a catastrophic injury. Like, right. Penny with the microfracture, that was a career ender. Like, not just for Penny Hardaway, for other guys.
One after the other, after the other, after the other with,
right,
Ja. Yeah.
With Ja, it's not even like, it's not like we're still talking about the labrum. We're not even really talking about the hip. We're not even, you know, it's just the lack of availability.
Yeah, it's just sometimes the best ability is availability, and but it's crazy, man. Like, I think actually, have we reached a point where we can revisit the Tuomas Isolo conversation? Because I think in the first 2 weeks of the season, especially after Ja had his comments on TI, there was a lot of mistrust and an appetite maybe for seeing a coaching change, I would say. Now, especially when you look at what they've done without Ja, without Scotty, without Ty, your three expected primary ball handlers, and shoot, let's throw Javon Small in that category because that guy was actually playing a little bit before he got hurt. And the fact that they're sitting here one game below 500 with basically trying to turn Vince Williams from a wing into a point guard, like, I do think the coaching staff probably deserves a little bit of credit for that. I don't know that every coach could adapt in those circumstances to create a product that's at least decent. So I actually think Isolo deserves some flowers for the way he's coached this team.
Yeah, I also think they had an unfortunate set of circumstances where they started the year with a fair, like, the schedule was much tougher early on. But then you factored in they weren't playing well, period. And, like, we can talk about the offensive scheme, whatnot. The reality is they were just not playing good basketball. Like, Ja was not good. Jaren was not good. There weren't a whole lot of guys that were playing good basketball. And so then you had the losses piling up on top of new voice. And then, like, let's be real, Ja doesn't like to get called out. Because this is the other aspect of it. Ja wasn't the only person that got called out in that meeting. Ja's the only one that we talked about. And he just straight up no-showed that entire second half. Like, how
I probably didn't get over that, yeah.
Like, how irresponsible. And, like, how, my whole thing, though, is I could deal with all of that if he just played. But we're trending to another year where I think, what, if I offered you 50 games right now, you'd sign in blood?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Because we're at 14 of 27. And I think two of those games that count were, like, 6 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, this is the question that I have is, like, is it just injury prone? Is it lack of taking care of the body? Like, what is it?
Yeah, it's a little guy who plays with the ball in his hands and is really aggressive, right? You step on ankles, you come down in awkward landing positions. And these are all the concerns that everybody had about Ja Morant from the jump, from the get-go. Is that a slender player with his build who plays the way he does? How durable is he going to be? So it's, in that sense, it's really no surprise. It doesn't make it any less frustrating or painful as a fan to have to endure it. But that's why it's important that you put quality pieces around Ja Morant. For the longest time, you had Tyus Jones, who was like the ultimate like high floor backup, who really deserved a starting job, left, became a starter elsewhere in the league.
He's the Jacoby Brissett, though. You know what I mean? Like, he is an elite backup point guard. But if you make him your everyday starter, he's usually below average.
So here's where I'm at, though. It's like, it feels like we're moving this franchise subtly and slow. It's a ship. When you are, it's like a huge ocean freighter, cargo liner,
aircraft
whatever.
Aircraft carrier.
And it's hard to turn it around because when Ja Morant is sort of the impetus of everything, like it takes a long time to get something like that going in a different direction when you've built the franchise around one guy, which they have. But it feels like they are starting to turn it in a course that will be long-term more sustainable for these extended periods of times when he is out. Because you look at how important Zach Edey has become. If he can, and that's a whole other conversation, but like if he can stay healthy and you got Jaren on the floor, and then eventually you're going to have Scottie Pippen Jr. and Ty Jerome back. And even without those guys, like Cam Spencer has stepped up. Vince Williams Jr. is starting to play better. So like you are insulating your roster. I feel like they've done a good job of that. They've done a good job of insulating their roster from full dependence on Ja Morant. And I think, you know, depending on, well, okay, let me ask you this. Explain to me again real quick how the Suns thing works. We need the Suns to be a whole lot worse than they are.
Correct.
Right?
We need them to start. So the simplest explanation is the Wizards, they control the pick. So the swap technically goes through the Wizards. If the Suns pick is worse than the Wizards pick, they get the pick. But if the Wizards pick is worse than the Suns pick, we get the Suns pick.
Okay.
So basically, Washington controls it all. Washington is going to wind up. So like, for instance, if the Wizards get the one and the Suns get the two, they're keeping that.
Mm-hmm. So,
but we still need them to lose, yes.
Yeah, but I mean, shoot. Let's say you end up with the 10th pick. You can still get a good player with the 10th pick in this year's draft. So, I even with the Desmond Bain trade and everything, like, because I'm with you, man. Like, it honestly feels like the by committee approach or the Vince Williams, Cam Spencer approach. Like, I kind of like that ball handling and initiation and facilitation better than I do the Desmond Bain.
Oh, like. I wish Desmond well, and I'm grateful for everything he gave to the organization. The fact
and a
that
great
I,
player, correct, but he's not a player.
The fact that I don't have to watch Des run the offense this year makes my Grizzlies viewing experience better.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess what I'm kind of getting at is, let's say Ja Morant had played 27 games. You know, they're 13-14 right now. What are they with this, the version of Ja that we've seen this season? What's their record with Ja? You know, is it?
I think they're probably a couple of games better. And the reason why is, yes, Ja has not played well this year, but they have had, it kind of gets back to like what we were talking about at the start. They've had a lot of games that they were competitive in, and because they can't get organized late, they kind of fell apart. And I think with him, like, that doesn't happen.
Right? You call 12, right? So I mean, I'd give him 17-12, right? Like, they're 13-14 right now. I'd say maybe 17-12,
yeah.
16-13.
Yeah,
you know, with him. But the thing is, like, I don't think it drastically changes the cap.
No,
like,
we're not talking about a team that's in the top four of the West.
I agree. So I do think in that sense, like, it's wise to limit your expectations for the difference Ja Morant will make.
No, and I mean, that's the other aspect of it. It's like, well, if they had Jerome or if they had Pippen, it's less of an issue. I think the other problem is it's not just they don't have Ja, it's that you then wind up with, like we said, Vince Williams essentially running the offense or Cedric Coward running the offense. Not that, like, they acquitted themselves poorly, but it's like, that is not what you want.
No, I mean, it's cool.
It's like a Kadarius Toney. His high school team's quarterback, Northwestern down in Miami, their quarterback got hurt, and they just moved him to quarterback.
Yeah, gotta love it. But Coward, man, like, what can he not do? Like, what can that man not do on the floor? I love him. I mean, he does it all. He's a rookie who plays beyond his years, and What a delight. He just seems like a delightful young man.
It's like, man, am I glad that guy was overlooked for so long. Yeah. And like, because I think we're now at the point where I think if he would have gone to Duke, I really do buy into the whole thing. Like, he would have been a top five pick this year, even in a better draft.
Scary to think about how good Duke would be if they had Cedric.
Yeah.
I mean, they might be number one. They might be the best team in college basketball already. You throw Cedric Coward onto that team, it'd be terrifying. But yeah, I couldn't be more glad that he ended up with the Grizzlies. So I don't know, man. I mean, it's all things considered, 13-14, stealing that win last night. I think they're doing fine.
All right, let's talk to the man that called the game last night, of course, on the Memphis Grizzlies radio network. He is Eric Kastein. He joins us next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium, unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Yeah. That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies radio network play-by-play announcer Eric Kastein to the program. All right, Eric, contextualize it for us. I said it's not going to have the mythology that the Hateful Eight did, but last night had a lot of vibes of the, oh my God, can you believe they're doing this last night?
A little bit, yeah. Brevin Knight actually walked up to me right before they started their broadcast, and I was walking back up to our little perch, and he said, it's the Nasty Nine tonight. And I said, I'd love to see it. And we did. I mean, they played their tails off. And I don't know, sometimes you watch NBA games for so many years that you're surprised it boils down to sometimes one team just plays a little bit harder. Not that the other team doesn't want to win. Maybe they think without John, without Zach, that it's going to be a little bit of an easier go and they can flip a switch. But I saw a lot of stuff last night, I thought, where the Wolves kind of like let up a little bit. They got a lead. They felt like they were in a good groove in that third quarter. And the Grizzlies just kept fighting. They just kept going back to things that worked. And, you know, you get a guy like Jock Landale, who they're not expecting to spot up in the corner and knock down a couple of those big threes. And Jaren's aggression in the last two games has been fantastic. So, yeah, it had a lot of the same vibes. It was a fun locker room to be around afterwards. Got a chance to, you know, catch Brandon Clark for a minute, and, you know, I can only imagine what he felt, and I just, you know, kept it brief because you don't like harboring on things after they probably already talked to the media. That's usually when I see him. It's like, man, it's great to have you back, and I'm sure you are stoked and were chomping at the bit, and he was just like, it felt great, and he knows there's a long way to go, and that he didn't have his best rhythm, but I thought he affected the game a couple of times, a couple of big offensive rebounds, and sometimes that's all it takes. And so Cobb is right about what you see with Cedric Coward. You see him handling the ball. He had a possession that I remember where he's bringing the ball up, and there's a hesitation where the lane opens and he can split the two defenders, and he didn't wait. He just went. And just plays with that confidence that you don't see a lot in young guys. And it's the same type of confidence that Cam Spencer was playing with. And, you know, we wish him all the best and hopefully a quick return. It's personal reasons, so we'll leave it at that. But, you know, you went into that going, all right, you're really undermanned tonight. Yeah, they're going to be without Anthony Edwards, who, and I watched warming up and he looked good. I was like, he's probably going to go tonight. And he didn't. And, that, you know, you got to take those opportunities and make the most of them. And the Grizzlies did that.
Yeah, I mean, so I felt like the Grizzlies are down Ja Morant, Zach Edey, the litany of other players who have been out. Yes, Minnesota's without Anthony Edwards, but they still had healthy Dante DiVincenzo. They had Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert. So the advantage from a health standpoint was still with Minnesota. And then you had Eric. The Grizzlies going so deep into their bench as to play Jamai Neshak and Omax Prosper. Mm-hmm. I mean, how about that? Like the ability for Tuomas Isolo to get contributions from that deep, not just really in the roster, but from that deep within the franchise, you know, to come out and what can you say just about the job he's done in terms of galvanizing this makeshift team that's got different pieces coming in and out of the rotation every night?
Well, you know, I think the criticisms early on were fair because it didn't look like it was connected. It didn't look like, hey, you're right there in games, but you just don't have the pieces. We saw that injury plagued year where guys were playing, everything was flowing, and you're in a ball game and you're closing with five guys who weren't even in the NBA against all-stars and future Hall of Famers, and it's just usually not going to work out. There is that line that it crosses, and you know, I think the juggling of the lineups, and at first he was steadfast with what he wanted to do, and he's made some alterations. So it's hard as a fan to have that P word, patience. But I think this is an example of why sometimes it's okay to take a breath and go, hey, yeah, there's some concerns, but can it be fixed? And I think that he's done a terrific job of juggling around lineups. And they started basically three of their front court that usually don't play all three together. I don't remember ever seeing a time where Santi, Jaren, and Brandon Clark were on the floor at the same time. You know, those are rotation guys that split the same minutes. And it made it tough at times for Minnesota to pick who are you going to guard. You create your own mismatches. And I thought in the L.A. game, and that was one of my questions in last night's coach's corner was, a report was, you were able to create mismatches and find scoring opportunities that way. It started with defense, but then the mismatches not only led to scoring opportunities, but also created opportunities for other guys. There was a play, I remember Jaren had either Bogdanovich or Harden on him, and you're just like, oh, just go into the lane. And then two guys came, and Jaren saw it right away, kicked it out to Cam Spencer, who, as we know, was electric that night, and he knocked down a three. He passed right out of the double team. And that's that comfort and trust level that builds with time. And I think we're seeing that. And I think some of the struggles that relate to Ja can be that he hasn't played a lot with these guys. Multiple times we've seen him elevate and look like he's going to shoot. And new players that haven't been there very long are turning and looking to see for a potential offensive rebound. And he tries to throw a pass and it goes out of bounds. That chemistry does take a little time to develop. And so I think it will continue to grow. They still have to get that compliment back. But when you go into a game and you saw Minnesota last night clearly say
as a defensive scheme, we are pressing the ball every time down the floor. We are going to be up on these guys. They don't have a traditional ball handler. We are going to make whoever has the ball uncomfortable as best we can. And at times it worked. At other times it didn't. And more times than not, and more times than it did work, it didn't work, because the Grizzlies had guys that just stayed the course and moved the basketball. And, you know, it's a funny game when that basketball flows and it moves and you pass a good shot for a great shot. You may not always make the great shot, but you got the great shot. And that's a better way to go about it than, well, I've got a good shot and I don't know if I can get it for a great shot, so I'm just going to take it. And it's a hard balance to find. So, yeah, I think he deserves a lot of credit. I think the coaching staff deserves a lot of credit for the way they've played. You know, we have to take into account what, you know, the record against above 500 teams are, but Minnesota's in the same boat. Minnesota was 15-1 against sub 500 teams going into last night. 15-1.
Well, I think you and I talked about this.
On that.
You and I, maybe Cobb as well, because remember, this was a theme for last year too. All right, the Grizzlies, if you're an average or below average team, but then you like looked up the numbers. There were two teams that beat there were two teams that had good records against teams above 500 in the regular season. You'll never guess who they were. The Thunder and the Celtics.
You can figure it out.
Well, remember the Knicks, remember when you went up to New York and you said, like, their fans are complaining like our fans. Like, oh, they could beat the bad teams, but they can't beat anyone else. Like, they had the same complaints.
Right. Now they're going to complain about not hanging a banner, so they'll find something.
I know this is where you might be being someone who works for a league. I tipped my cap to the Lakers last week when they were above the using the floor, the cup floor, and they use the real floor.
Uh-huh.
I got to begrudgingly give I'm tipping my cap to the Knicks too. Like, that's just not the same as another banner.
No, I get that, but I do, you know, I've heard both sides. And that was a big talk. We got in late last night, and so I'm listening to the overnight stuff on ESPN, because when you're in Minnesota, you got to de-ice your plane, and not a quick process. So, yeah, so we were sitting there for a while, and, you know, I heard the side of, I don't like it. I think it's a bad look. I think it, you know, this thing has been a success. Everybody likes it. Embrace it. And by doing this, you're kind of thumbing your nose at it. And I've heard the other people, I think it was Shanae Ogumote, who used the term, they're 10 toes down like 15 times. But that's the way that she looks at it, is they're all in on a big banner, a championship banner. And if that's how they want to attack their business, I support that. And so I see both sides of it.
Honestly, you know what the argument is for me, though?
The Grizzlies won two division titles, and there's no banner, but you go to Houston or Oklahoma City, and there are banners for every division title. Houston has won enough where they have a big, giant banner with the years that they won the division title. And Oklahoma City has, like, they hung their division championship banner one year for the Northwest. They clinched it, and they played the Grizzlies the next game at home, and they hung it that night. They had it, and they hung it that night. I was like, wow. They didn't even wait till the end of the year. They're hanging that thing now. So every organization has a different philosophy. So
I think what it really boils down to for me is the fact that it was league mandated. That's what makes me not want to do it. Like,
yeah,
it's the we're trying to insist that this is something. My thing is, if you want to hang it, it's a choice. But the fact that it was league mandated, because, like, basically we are going to make this a thing. It's like, that just makes me the Lady Doth protest too much.
Yeah, I see that. I see that too. And again, I just spitballing for what the Grizzlies' philosophy may be. It's like, hey, look, it's great that we won two division titles, but that's not the ultimate goal. And if all you have in your rafters are division titles, you're announcing to everybody, we haven't been quite good enough to get to that elite upper echelon of conference champion, world champion. So I get that too. I get that's you want to keep a perspective of, hey, yeah, that was a goal, but that was one of the minor goals, and the other goals we haven't yet achieved. So when we achieve those, yeah, we'll be happy to hang the banner. So again, you know, it is what it is. But you know, look, it's at the end of the day, if you're going to be an elite team, going back to the original point, the elite teams have a better than 500 record against
.500 and better teams, and then they have just a stellar record against the sub .500 teams. They lose maybe 3 or 4 games a year, and so that's where you separate. That's where the separation comes in, and I think that it's tough to judge the Grizzlies on completely. Not all, you can judge a little bit because they didn't look good against good teams. They got smoked by a couple of, I mean, just drummed, run off the court. But you're also playing with a less than full deck, and, you know, that's, can't live on that excuse. The Grizzlies have been dealing with it forever, and everybody seems to be dealing with it these days at times, other than the Thunder. But, you know, you still have to find a way to win those games, and they did that last night. That's a good first step.
So coming up, won't be long before the Grizzlies are heading back to Oklahoma City. I guess that's Monday night. Eric, I don't know if you saw this, but Oklahoma City finally took a second loss. So is the shine coming off? Or the
have we
the
figured Thunders- has the league figured them out?
Are they gettable?
The thing in an 82-game season is you're going to have those nights. Remember in that game, they had a good-sized lead at one point. And you're like, okay, here we go again. And, you know, it speaks to staying the course, staying resilient, staying with what's going on, not panicking. Look, they're elite on the defensive end. They have guards that go up and press. They're elite in their mentality of everybody accepting their roles. And I think when you see that, you see success. Look at how the Grizzlies have done it the last couple of weeks, last month, in this stretch of 9-3. They've had more guys accept more roles and lead by example. The most notable to me is Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Guy's a two-time world champion. He's been in the highest level of games. He's put a ring on his finger twice where he was a contributor on both of those teams. And he's now coming off the bench because the long-term future of this team depends on developing guys like Jalen Wells and Cedric Cowart. Now Jalen Wells is playing his best basketball of the season. Cowart is playing that still steady, really solid, making the right plays, still has some rookie moments. But Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has stepped away. And last night, he started cold from the field, and not because the shots were, like, way off. He took 3 or 4 elbow jumpers that rattled, like, literally in and out. And I'm like, geez, man, that's the right play and the right mentality. And he didn't go away from it. He didn't let a couple of misses sink his head, go away from it, not be willing to shoot, thinking to himself, it's not my night. I got to get rid of the ball. He stuck with it. And when those shots came later and he made them, they were big buckets. So I think that's a big factor. And when you talk about, like, the Thunder, they're going to take that loss and they're going to go, okay. And we're all talking about, could they win 70? Could they win it? They're focused on the next 48 minutes. Of course, and, you know, I'm sure in the locker room they talk about it and they realize that they're the top dog in this league, but that does not, you know, preclude you from having a tough night. I mean, I remember the year the Bulls were the first team to win 70. I think of their losses, like 7 or 8 of them were against teams you thought there's no way they can beat them. I watched one night, remember it distinctly, they were playing the Denver Nuggets, who were bad that year, and Chris Jackson, then Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, just went bananas and was making everything, and the Bulls couldn't stop it, and they lost, and I think they were like 17-point favorites at that time or something like that, and everybody was like, how did the Nuggets beat the mighty Bulls? And it's like, because it's basketball. You know, bad teams come up and win. How does a 16 seed beat a 1 seed in the NCAA tournament, where if you play that game 20 times, the 1 seed wins 19. That one night, the 16 seed got them and beat Virginia. And, you know, that's what makes the tournament great. It balances out.
Easy,
NBA.
Joel Klatt.
You have those. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the reason we have 7-game playoff series. That's the reason through 82 you earn that home court advantage and what it means to you. So it's on any given night, it can go the wrong way if things aren't just, for whatever reason, the basketball gods are on a coffee break that night and decide that you're not going to make a lot of shots, and it happens. And so, you know, I've seen both sides of it. And I mean, I remember one night with Sean Toohey still on our broadcast, and the Grizzlies were in that transitional phase and they were like big underdogs and the Spurs were just killing everybody. And Toohey looks at me and he said, the Grizzlies are going to get them tonight. And I looked at him and I said,
dude, I really frown upon you drinking before coming to the games. If you could kind of stay sober, that would be great, like jokingly. And he's like, I'll buy lunch tomorrow if the Spurs win. I was like, sweet, let's go. And the Grizzlies ended up winning the game. And I was like, golly, now I got to buy a multimillionaire lunch.
That's
because
tough.
He called it. He just saw. I gladly picked up the check. I gladly picked up
you
the
didn't
check.
Gator already. You didn't want to do that. Oh, I got it.
No, not one bit. And he is not one to let you gator arm. So,
he told the waitress it's on him today.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a reason he had three fillets and a big bottle of red or something at that time.
No, it was an off-menu bottle of red.
Yeah, right. He did not do that. He was very cool
lunch,
about it. But it goes to show that you can, you know, when you're playing well and things are working, you know, the separation in a lot of these games, we all know it. The average point differential is not it's a couple of baskets. You know, in general, it's elite when you see a team and their point differential is in double figures. That's like championship level. So what are we talking about? We're talking about a shot that goes that doesn't, a loose ball that you get that the other team doesn't, and a second chance that, you know, maybe wasn't supposed to happen and you cash in on it and making the most when the opportunities are presented. And looking at teams in the past, that Western Conference Finals where the Grizzlies were swept, one of the prevailing themes was every mistake the Grizzlies made in that series, the Spurs capitalized. Literally, it felt like every time there was an opportunity for San Antonio to get out and run off a mistake, they did and they scored. And that adds up very, very quickly.
All right, Eric, we'll wrap it up here. We're 27 games, so we're roughly a third of the way through the season. If you had to pick the most outstanding Grizzly third of the way through the season, who would you pick?
I mean, it's a short sample size, but I think you have to look at Zach Edey at the top there. But if you want to go for the longevity factor, I think you have to look at Coward and Wells and go Cole, because Wells especially started where the shots just weren't falling. They just weren't going. And now he's playing with extreme confidence. And I loved his comment last night when someone – you know, said this is clearly a travel with that step-through move. And he chirped back and said, looks clean to me.
I didn't hear no whistle.
I love when they fire back at it. And I think they've been fantastic. And obviously Cam Spencer's in that mix too, because nobody expected what you're getting from Cam Spencer, a two-way guy that last year had a massive ball game in his home area in Washington, D.C. And, you know, the look on his face after the game was worth every penny. And it was wild after that game, if I can indulge just a quick story. You know, I've told you guys in the past that when Mark Leishman was on the PGA Tour and playing in Memphis, his family would rent the house that at the time I owned in Southwind. So I became friends with them, and they drove up to see the game with their two boys who are big basketball fans. And I took them to the back, and Cam Spencer was just elated to meet Mark Leishman, knew who he was, knew everything about him, talked to him. And after the game, Cam just has the pro game of his career. And he comes up to me and he goes, man, that was really cool meeting Mark Leishman. And I'm like, that's what you're going to tell me after the game you just had? Seriously?
Didn't know you're such a big Australian golf fan.
Yeah. I mean, he's a big golf fan, period. So I think that speaks to the confidence he has in his game. And, you know, to hear him chirping at the Clipper bench, like, hey, you better get somebody else to guard me because this dude ain't doing it. And I think he was talking about James Harden, and he wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong. And he's, you know, he doesn't love doing a lot of interviews, and I know that, but he does them, and they're great. And so I always, you know, kind of make it a point afterwards to say, we really appreciate it. I know it's not your favorite thing to do, but, you know, fans love to hear from you. He's like, oh, anytime, I'm happy to do it. And, you know, at the time, he's finding out some news where he's going to have to be away from the team. And I say, hey, man, I kind of heard you're going to possibly be gone. I wish you and your family all the best. And he was appreciative of that. It's the right mentality. So most outstanding player, I mean, I think you have to go Zach, but those other three guys, You're not knocking on the door of 500 without their contributions right now, without a doubt.
Yeah, and it's like, do we penalize Zach? Like, do we do it like NBA rules? He didn't play you know, what is 65, whatever 65 of 82 is. He didn't play enough to qualify, so we have to give it to Wells.
I don't love that rule if it's a legitimate injury. I think that's unfair to guys that are dominant and, you know, you tweak an ankle and you miss, you know, 5-6 games, and you tweak it again, you miss 5-6 more. Now, if you're going to hit those markers that mean a lot of dollars to these guys.
I was going
to
say, the biggest thing I don't like about it is I don't think Cobb and I should dictate what their bank account is.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, with the way the collective bargaining agreement is, when you make all NBA, when you win these postseason awards or you win these things, it equates to
that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think Cobb and I should have the ability to influence. You know what I mean?
Well, at least the NBA voting is actually done by people who cover the league day in and day out. The Heisman Trophy voting and some of these other sports, like, there's literally people who haven't, who don't actively cover the leagues. So I will say at least the NBA's voting is done by, like, good writers. Now, are they going to get it right every time? I mean, that's a whole nother story. But yeah, I mean,
I totally agree. And they're pretty transparent about it. Like, your ballot has to be made public. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm with you, Cobb. Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of,
there's a ton of pressure. I did it that one year I was on the beat. I got that ballot and I took it more seriously than I've ever taken any voting responsibility. I mean, I was an AP poll voter, and that to me didn't even carry an ounce of the gravity that the all NBA stuff did. And that was really even before the contractual or like the incentives were built into it. And it's I think most voters in the NBA world who have a ballot on that stuff take it pretty seriously.
Though I also kind of think, I think to your point, Eric, I think most voters kind of know what the line is. Like, you didn't quite play enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, maybe that knocks someone from first to second team, but it was tough to come up with an example of somebody that didn't meet that 65 game, like, mark. It's, I don't know. I kind of like, I like Lee.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.